December 8th, 2023. It's a Watt for Pedro show.
Thank you.
for Pedro Show. Happy Friday. Started off with John Coltrane Quartet. Excerpt, Mr. PC, live at Birdland, March 2, 1963. Then we had from Live Skull. This was a John Peel session. Safe from Me. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me Mark C. from Live Skull. Welcome aboard, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Now, we got to give right away credit to Karen Schomer for the Connect, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Please bring, I'm interested in your journey to music, Mark, so please bring your earliest musical recollection, if you would.
Well, I guess... one thing was my older sister was kind of hooked in with these kids who were listening to new music as it was coming out. So she was passing down records to me, like the first Led Zeppelin record. And I remember that making a serious impression on me. Around the house, we had a piano. I used to play around on it, but I never really... learned much. I just would jam with myself.
You didn't have the ordeal of the piano lesson?
I don't think I ever really had a piano lesson. It's possible maybe one or two, but at that point, when I was growing up, I wasn't really that receptive to that kind of instruction.
Well, I've had people on the show, and it wasn't their idea either. It seems like the parents, and it kind of a trauma for some cats. They almost wanted to quit music, and I think it big problem was probably the teacher.
Yeah, but, I think you're right. The methodology of teaching was not that fun.
Right, some kind of like, you know, here's how you do it, now do it, or some shit, right? And it's probably tuned Jane into, or, you know. What about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
No, I remember when I think it was probably grade school, actually, when they were, handing out the instruments or whatever. And I was like, oh, that I want to play the trumpet. That looks cool.
Yeah.
But there were only like two trumpets and two or 200 kids. So by the time it was my turn, I was offered a clarinet, which I appreciate now. But at the time, I just had no interest in. So I basically skipped all my...
You got the clarinet, but then you said, nah, I'll pass.
I had that clarinet for years, but I never really connected with it.
Oh, okay. 10 weeks in junior high. I tried, but Mr. Luna was a teacher. He said, "What? You gotta, Mr. Watt, I don't want you to keep wasting your time and my time." And he looked at the class, our time. So I was like, yeah, fuck this. Right. Seventh grade trauma. Okay. Yeah. What about the first record you bought with your own money? I know you got the Led Zeppelin one from your sister, but that was free, right?
Yeah, with my own, I mean, I didn't really have much spending money when I was growing
That's
up.
That's why I asked that question, because
by the time I was able to buy records, I think it could have been Blood on the Tracks by Dylan.
Bobby Dylan.
Or maybe Live Evil by Miles Davis. I mean, one of those. I had a Jimi Hendrix record, I think, after he passed away. That I might have bought.
Michael Henderson, I really liked on that live. Dave Holland, great bass man too. But Michael Henderson was just, you know, bring a guy from the Apollo. Yeah. Yeah, why not? Make it Econo. He ended up a disco singer in Europe after that.
Yeah, that's great.
Trippy. What about first gig you saw?
Well, I was very fortunate that my older sister took me to a Jimi Hendrix show.
Ah, you got to see Jimmy.
Yeah, is that the Spectrum in Philly? I don't know if you're ever aware of that.
No, you know what? Hit this. That's a trippy thing you brought up, because second wife, Charles Bukowski, lives here in Pedro. That's where he spent his last 14 years.
Wow.
Her name's Linda, and she's from Philly, and she told me, she smoked a Lenuel with Jimmy at that gig.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it was so crazy because, I mean, I was young enough that I was loving being there, but it sounded kind of, it was hard for me to understand the sound a little bit in this big stadium, et cetera. And by the end of the show, he couldn't leave the stage. The crowd was just, I mean, they were up on the stage holding him. They had to bring, the bouncers had to come on and, like, basically get him off the stage. Nobody wanted to leave.
Pry him loose.
Yeah, it was before they controlled everybody so much at these shows. You know, you used to hang out after a show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Well, let me, you know, I know you end up on guitar. So
yep.
there's the piano, there's the unplayed clarinet, and then there's the guitar. I mean, see why I'm trying to connect the dots here.
Yeah, well, I mean, a big change for me was when I moved to San Francisco after school. I immediately discovered, so to speak, punk rock. And it was 1977, so it was well underway. And it's really the first I had heard of it, and met some friends who were all involved in the scene in San Francisco. And I started, I'd studied photography in school, and I'd given up on everything from school and art photography, everything. But I thought, oh, I could take pictures of some of these bands, which I started to do very casually, and then started roadieing for this band called The Situations. It was a really cool San Francisco band. And, you know, I started seeing, you know, I got to see all these bands out there, The Germs, everybody. And while I was roadieing for this one band, the Situations, the drummer decided to start his own band and just invited me to be in his band. And I said, I don't play anything. And he said,
A little piano.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I said, but I did play around on piano, just myself casually. And he said, okay, keyboards. So I started there. And
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That was the audition, huh?
Yeah, I got exactly. When I went back to Philly to visit my parents, I went to a pawn shop in West Philly and bought a really cool 60s Farfisa organ. Took it back on the plane. Almost broke my back.
Yeah.
And you know, we actually played a few shows. I brought my
what was this group? Box. What was this group called?
Well, we had different names. At one point, we were called Blasé Decay. Then we were called Crop. And my roommate actually at that time was Deborah Isle from Romeo Void.
Oh yeah,
and
singer.
So we started opening for her band at different places, and then had other shows. We actually, if you want me to continue, I'll just tell it quickly. But while I was still in San Francisco, and I wanted to say that this is where I really got into record collecting with punk rock. I mean, I wanted every single that I liked. I didn't buy everyone just to have it. I bought ones I liked, but I was avid about, you know, me and my friends reserved the first copies of Unknown Pleasures to come into San Francisco.
Whoa, so wow.
Five copies came into one store, and the guy's like, you better run over and get them quick, because I'm having a hard time holding on to your copies.
You're talking about Joy Division.
Yeah.
Now, the big label, I remember in those older days in the city, was Subterranean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I wonder if they did. They have was Dead Kennedys on that? Maybe
I don't think so. I think the one I'm thinking of is Flipper, you know, and
oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Then also Joe Carducci did something with those guys, and so I know a little bit about it. It's 400 miles north. I mean, I know it's all.
Yeah. Well, Flipper almost was enough to keep me in San Francisco. You know, San Francisco music scene was a little bit retro. You know, like punk still from 76, 77 were their main influences. And we were starting to get intrigued by post-punk now with Wire and Gang of Four and Joy Division.
Well, yeah, stuff like Sleepers.
Yeah, and the Sleepers we loved.
Ricky, great singer.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Started off as drummer for Crime.
Oh, really? They had the best posters.
I know, but not the greatest band, but I love Sleepers. Oh my God, they were such a good band, and I guess he was in Flipper a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, Brother Ted was telling me he had a real rough time growing up, Ricky. You know, it was really fucked up. Yeah, very sad.
That makes sense.
Really talented cat, and really sad to lose him. I want to play. You gave me another John Peel thing that Live Skull did, a demo.
Thank you. open. The surface of the table is uneven, and this is what held words. They came and went, were served and cleared. I can see them in the way the table leans slightly, in the pulled-out chairs and shuffled papers on the floor. Now words are a home, with fresh air blowing through. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
for Pedro show. That chunk of music started with Live Skull doing a demo, Adama, Peel Session. Sky Furrows after that. Welcome to Niverville, speaking of Karen Schomer. Circles of Animals with Poison the Lamb. Ithaca. Not Ithaca, but Ithaca. With the Imitation of War. Ye, or Have You a Direct Connection to Change from Cohort B. It's a cassette I got in the mail. Shiverboard was on there, too, with the Torrential Drencher. And Nod, I think this is off there. Got it in the mail. Byron sent it to me. I guess it came out the vinyl version of this. This is Theme from Nod. Rochester Band. Non La with Holmes. Yeah. There's Michael Crystal, Jerome Glaugwin, Fabian Rub Trio with Roast Cheese, and finally Live Skull. Sorry. Debbie's Heartache. We were talking off air about, I was talking with Chip Kim and one of the Dills, and he was saying about 77 up in the city was like a special time for him that he'll never forget. And Mark here is saying it was great for him, too. Yeah. That, yeah, and then, like you said, it was a coincidence. You just stumbled on.
Yeah, I remember, seeing the first Dead Kennedy shows, seeing the Germs, seeing, and then the English band started coming. The first fall tour, that show at the Mabuhay Gardens was just amazing.
Well, all the gigs were there for a while, right?
Yeah, and then the Deaf Club.
Then Deaf Club, yeah. I saw that fall. Was Blurt on the gig?
That first show, I don't think so, but I don't remember.
Because here it was Blurt, Fall, and Divine possible. Horseman.
That's possible. I after the first single of the fall, I was just, I mean, they were one of the reasons I think I really started playing music, because I was like, oh, this is something.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about music again. Okay, so you're on the keyboard still. Yeah, you haven't gone to the guitar yet.
Yeah, well, what happened was, we're starting to get into post-punk and buying those fresh records, and then comes No New York. Compilation of
New York City, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, what is this? And I just started listening to it over and over. Finally decided to take a trip to New York City to see what it was all about, and caught this show with Teenage Jesus and the Jerks and Suicide at Max's. And I was like, I just felt this was some serious musical action going on, and my whole band decided to move to New York.
Oh, wow. Because you gave them a gig report? And they said, yeah.
Yeah, well, we were all a little bit antsy just about the, like I said, this retro quality of the music in San Francisco. Aside from, like, the Sleepers were over, and Flipper was cool, but, they also had their own difficulties, and the whole San Francisco, when I moved there, it was a post-hippie era. There was still a lot of drug lag left over, and then the punk scene was very heavily into speed. And
yeah, it kind of destroyed that scene, right?
Yeah, it totally did, and I wanted to get away from that. And funny, you go to New York, Lower East Side.
And that was pretty ravaged, too.
But our focus was on the music, and we got to New York, and basically we started.
They had a Mark in that one of their bands. What was it, Mars? And I think this cat lives in Barcelona these days. He's still making music, yeah.
Yeah, they were one of my favorite bands.
So well, they were the big one off that record. Also Contortions, they were great.
Yeah. And
actually, Brian Eno made that record, huh?
Yeah, he produced it. And, Live Skull, for the first time a few weeks ago, got to play with Bush Tetras.
Oh, wow, okay. With Steve Shelley on drums, right?
Yeah. And
the new Sonic guy. They got the new Sonic. He was new guy for 25 years.
right, exactly. But we got to New York. We wanted a guitar player in the band. We put an ad in the Village Voice saying, now it's a common thing, but at the time I think not many ads had this phrasing, which was punk funk guitarist wanted.
Wow, speaking of contortions.
We got every single New York guitarist from Dean and Reed.
Did you get Pat Place?
Except Pat Place. She was busy learning guitar with the contortions. I found out that was her first.
Yeah, she was on the show, her and Cynthia, and I can't believe it because she was so great.
I know.
She was just learning.
Yeah, unbelievable. But, so we auditioned all these guitar players, and Tom and I, you know, we had been listening to...
You're talking about Tom Violent, that he ended up being the... Thurston told me he wrote Tom Violet's for him. Tom Payne, right?
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, we had been listening to this post-punk, which was the state-of-the-art kind of evolution of punk, aside from No Wave, which was a whole separate thing. But none of these musicians really were hip to that yet, that we were auditioning. So they didn't really get what we wanted. And by the end of it, the drummer was frustrated. He wanted to start the band with one of the people we auditioned with. And Tom and I said, you know, we're going to start a new band. And eventually we just picked up guitars ourselves and said, look, we're just going to try to play the sound we hear in our heads and we've been following.
Wow.
And that's what we did.
So, and you end up teaching each other, teaching yourselves?
Yeah, we just taught ourselves. In the meantime, before that, we had this band called Body, which was more of a no-wave band. And in that band, everyone would switch instruments. So I started to get to play with a guitar a little bit. And then when Body was offered a show that they couldn't do, Tom and I said, let's start a new band. And we came up with the name Live Skull.
Yeah, who did? You or Tom?
Well, I on the way to our meeting to decide on a name, I tore this poster off the wall for this reggae band, Black Skull.
Yeah.
And when I tore it, because I thought, oh, that's a cool name. And when I got there, it was on my counter. I'm looking down, and all I got was, well, they were playing live at some venue, and all I got was Skull Live, you know, Black Skull playing live at... I said, Live Skull.
That's it.
And that was it. And, you know, we said at that moment, we said, we want a name that we have to live up to. We want something to push us to be bigger and you know, go outside of ourselves. We already were in these bands that were kind of, you know, only got so far. And we said, well, we want to push ourselves. And we figured, like, Live Skull, you'd have to bring it.
Yeah, not just be a skull, but you got to be a live skull.
Yeah, exactly. And we liked it because we were kind of a little interested in the more intellectual side of new music. So we liked the connotations there, too.
Now, did you leave your drummer? You get a new drummer?
Yeah, we eventually, you know, we had different people playing drums, mostly non-drummers. You know, in those days... It was not easy to find a drummer.
Oh, I know. Ikue with DNA, right?
Yeah, she was amazing.
Yeah, but to, like, so that was her first time on drums, right?
Yeah. And we had to. Yes, exactly.
They actually played the Hong Kong Cafe. I got to see them, not with Robin, but with Rick Wright on the bass.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They were great bands.
But the idea of, playing and just playing, that was so balls out. To me, it's hard to call that post-punk because it's still the idea of just doing it.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
And also, in those days, like a couple of years made a big difference, not like these days.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. That's why people always ask me what was my biggest influence. And even though, like, aesthetically or musically, I would say post-punk and no-wave, but really I always say punk. Because, like you're saying, it's that idea that you just pick up the instrument and you play.
That's what it is. It's more an idea than a style. I think the style is the cats who pick up the instruments. That's where you get the style. Look, we're at the end of the first hour. December 8, 2023, edition of Pedro Show, special guest Mark C. Hold tight for hour two. December 8, 2023, second hour, Watt from Pedro's.
Embrace the fear. Armed in charge, uniform, gathering the intel.
Pedro show start off second hour, Live Skull doing Neutralize the Outlier, then Dead Lincoln. The next couple songs is from this benefit for the Gaza situation. Inhabited, Randolph and Graham got together. Tallplex after that with Dim, Randall the Ghost, Penguin. Then from Germany, Helldecker, My Baby Doesn't Smoke. This is from Randolph too, out of Eugene, very difficult music, so... Post-Homo Hubris Jazz, Side 9 excerpt. Finally, Live Skull with Details of the Madness. Can you remember the first Live Skull gig?
Yes, very well. First of all, it's the first time I ever played guitar. And we got, actually my other band, Body, got invited to do this, but Live Skull did it in the end. But it was a book release party for S. Clay Wilson comic.
Yes, the Checker and, Demon.
Yeah, and only it was at this like a Chippendales, like, you know, like yeah, like this Upper East Side dance club.
Right, for ladies, and, right?
You know, I had been in the punk scene and in these, you know, smaller bands and this and that, and, you know, like, we got a call, you know, that afternoon saying, the limousine's on its way to pick you guys up. And so we're riding. Live Skull is riding up instead of the yellow cabs. You know, we're riding up in a limousine
for your first gig.
I think what happened was I think they might have cut us off before our set was over, or at least they wouldn't let us do another song, one or the other, and the lead singer got a little mad and started throwing things around, and one thing led to the next, and then we were escorted out of the building.
Whoa. Now, who was it, besides you and Tom, who was in the band at this point?
We had Julie Hare. She's in this band, Three Teens Kill Four,
uh-huh.
A New York band, and Marnie Greenholz, who became, the long-term Live Skull bass player.
Right.
And she and Julie now are in this new band called Female Genius.
Whoa.
Not to be confused with Boy Genius. And
I don't want to hear them, but I would like to check out these guys. This interests me.
And then, I saw
Bob Lawton. He's living out in the desert now. I saw him a couple of months ago in Joshua Tree. Yeah, small fucking
wow,
world.
That's where I want to move.
He was running a theater in Northampton. Yeah. Anyway, who was on drums?
I don't remember exactly. We had so many different drummers.
Yeah, I remember playing with you guys, but there were different lineups.
Yeah,
I think I played one of the first gigs that Talia started singing for you.
That was 1987.
Yeah, really. Firehose. It's way down the road.
Yeah, Firehose was, we played with Firehose in Orlando.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. And Talia was not in good shape in those days.
Right, exactly.
But she's, she came through and she's doing incredible stuff now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, we played with Minutemen at Irving Plaza.
Absolutely, I remember that.
I remember.
And that was another she wasn't in the band then.
No, that was the original lineup, which was James Lowe on drums, Marnie, Tom Payne, and me.
Oh, so you do know the drummer. It was James?
Yeah, but he didn't play in that first
show. He wasn't at the first one, so he's not the original drummer, really.
he is the first recording drummer.
Though. Okay, and there was another band that kind of reminded me of that scene, too. Rat at Radar?
That's right.
Because you probably did gigs with them, right? I ended up, John Meyer conducted some of Greg Glenn Branca's.
Yes, that's right.
That's a trip, man.
And Sonda ended up being the Live Skull bass player.
That's right.
And she.
Sonda, that's right.
That was just
small
a
world.
Lucky coincidence that her band, that Red R broke up, and right when we needed a bass player, it was so.
You know what? I had another cat that Ron, one of their guitar players, he went on to be a solo guy. I'm going to play you in a perfect world.
Yo camino, es una paz.
Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with In a Perfect World, Live Skull. Passarella with, what do you call that when it's the same name?
All right.
Passarella is the name of the song. Yeah, when you, like, got an album title and it's the same
self-titled.
Name.
Self-titled.
Self-titled, yeah, but there's also a word for this. Some kind of Greek or Latin word. That it's a senior moment. What is it? It's lost it. Bomb was printing after that was Sadly Sal. Scenic with Above the Rim, and then Live Skull with Magic Consciousness. So we're talking about all these different, you went through a lot of iterations of the band, but not really, you had a core, right? It was just certain members were replacing or being replaced.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because you and Tom kept the core going, right?
Yeah, and remember, we had started playing together in San Francisco.
Right. You were the keyboard man.
Yeah, and Tom was playing bass.
Really? Tom was a bass man. Okay.
Yeah, he's actually a great bass player.
Wow. What's he doing these days? I haven't heard from
him. You know, he teaches film and does film criticism.
Wow.
Film.
Okay.
Living in Portland.
He's important. Okay. Yeah. But he's not doing music anymore. But I remember him talking to me about movies. So,
Figures.
That's good. So, but you went through all these different iterations, and like we were talking, people, Minutemen play with Live Skull, Pharaohs play with Live Skull. Shit, if I get out there with another project, I'll probably play with Live Skull again.
And that would be awesome.
But. There was a hiatus time, right?
Yeah. I don't want to say how many decades.
It was decades. Jesus. Yeah.
But in, 2017 or 2018, Rich, who was the second Live Skull drummer, and I got invited to play at this party for the 30th anniversary of Martin Beese's studio.
Martin, Brooklyn.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where we had recorded and mixed on most of our records.
I was there for the Evil record.
For the what?
Evil, Love Backwards, like the Sonic Youth, the one before Sister.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they recorded there, you know, Herbie Hancock recorded there. A lot of people recorded there.
What I remember was, like, in those days, Martin didn't have a booth. Like, he was in the room with you recording.
All of our records were recorded that way, in the room with him.
How did he know what was coming over the mics?
I have no idea, but he was so good at it. He just knew his room so well.
Yeah. He ended up making a solo record for Greg Ginn. I remember it had a little Kachina doll. And then I got to play with him a couple years ago in Canada. He was touring and stuff, had a band.
Yeah.
So you got invited to play this thing. So there's kind of a reunited thing.
And I was going to play with some people from the Swans. I was kind of looking forward to it. I hadn't jammed with those guys. It was just free-form jamming kind of thing. And then, but Rich had this idea that Marnie, the original bass player from High School, had moved back to New York, and he called Martin and said, "Hey, Marnie's here. Why don't Mark, Marnie, and I do something?" So I agreed to that, and we thought we'd get together once or twice maybe before doing it just to play together, and we just immediately started writing songs just like that, just like old times.
Oh, wow.
And, so by the time of the show, we had, like, five or six new tunes. And, Martin put out a compilation with one of the songs, and which was, I think, Details of the Madness, the first version of it.
And when you say move back to New York, you're not talking Manhattan. Are you talking, like, Hudson Valley? Because you're up north now, right?
No, I'm still.
Oh, wow, you're in Manhattan.
Boho,
okay.
Downtown Manhattan.
Okay.
Still there.
Okay. Yeah, some reason, I thought everybody moved.
Yeah, everybody. Most people have. But, okay. You know, the first move was to Brooklyn. A lot of people, Bushwick,
right.
Far out in Brooklyn, not just Brooklyn, far out in Brooklyn. That's been just an amazing change for the city, because Brooklyn is just so full of amazing creative projects, both art and business. And, you know, unfortunately, obviously, New York is just getting too expensive for everybody. But
yeah, absolutely.
Over this time period of the Brooklyn explosion of artists and musicians, it's just been such an amazing time of activity and work, you know. And nothing like back in the day when we were all huddled around each other within, like, you know, 14 square blocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you run into everybody. You go, you know, if you wanted to see, we didn't need cell phones because we know we'd run into everybody we wanted to see at one place or another on any given night.
That's a trip. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, December 8, 2023, Dish Watt Peter Schiff, special guest Mark C. Hold tight for hour three. December 8, 2023, third hour, Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. with fire. Thank you.
Waffle Pedro Show. Start off third hour, Live Skull doing Flying Blind. Then we had Witch Egg, Seku. That Witch Egg is a side project of, who's the OC guy? RISD guy. But he lives here in Cali now. But he's an incredible musician. Guitar man. Another senior moment. Fresher from Canada with I Could Watch You Eat Spaghetti. They're, I don't know, 3 hours north of Toronto. Tell me. God, I can't remember where they were telling me, but I just got to play with them a couple months ago. Infinite River, Summer Session number 6. Gotta miss you. And then finally, Live Skull, Inside the Exclusion Zone. So, Mark, tell me about this new record.
Yeah, Party Zero. You know, originally when Live Skull started, it was the Reagan era. And we just had to make some noise, you know, big noise. And yep. It just so happens, maybe so happens, that Live Skull restarted, you know, when Mr. Trump was elected president. And we were about as depressed as we could be.
Yep.
And, you know, the first Live Skull, you know, being still very punk influenced, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, it was personal conflict. It was rebellion against the world. Those were our themes, you know, the politics of personal relationships and then just, you know, trying to make your way in a world that didn't seem fit. And then, but the new Live Skull was kind of based on politics, really, you know, trying to react to the scary lean in this country, you know, away from democracy, frankly.
Yeah.
And we wanted to. So the lyrics of Party Zero, you know, Party Zero, the zero party, you know, the place where it's going to all start, the change. We originally were going to call it Flying Blind, just because we felt that's how this country was moving forward.
But, you mean like this tune?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's the new album. It features, we have our new guitar player, Dave Hollinghurst, and Ken Heine, the new bass player, and my old pal Rich Hutchins on drums. And we just came together on this, you know, trying to undo the darkness, trying to get out of the darkness through diving into it, you know, inside the exclusion zone's a good example of, you know.
Yeah. And where did you record it?
We recorded it here at my studio, which is in Hoboken.
Okay.
Which is called Deep Sea Studio, and it's where Sonic Youth had their studio, and Yola Tango has their studio. It's one of the last old industrial, building complexes in Hoboken. It's a pretty great space.
And did you make demos, or did you guys get together to jam things out? I mean, yeah, what was the process?
It was hard because it was kind of pandemic, post-pandemic kind of thing. You played when you could, but
sure.
We normally, Live Skull likes to ideally work from jamming together. Like maybe someone comes in with a riff or two, but no full songs.
Okay, yeah, no cassette tapes. Like, here's the tune, guys.
And Tom and I, back in the day, religiously, we take all the cassettes of all the rehearsals and then start piecing together one riff from the other. And we were trying to go, instead of something that went together, we wanted things that didn't go together so that you'd have a radical change so that you could really make an emotional statement or a musical statement, you know, that could change keys, whatever. So we really, that was our preferred way of working. You know, once the pandemic hit and people had to spend more time alone and stuff,
yeah.
You know, the current Live Skull, we kind of wrote out. Some of them are from jams. Some of them are from more worked out material, just solo on our own, because we just had to work that way.
Right. But would you call the album self-produced?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. The last, all the new Live Skull records
Yeah.
The first one was Saturday Night Massacre, and then Dangerous Visions and Party Zero were all self-produced at our own, at my studio.
Yeah, yeah. So you only have some, like, Svengali, hey, I got an idea, guys. It's the band organically cooking up their own.
Absolutely.
I want to play this Mad King shit. for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, that Chuck Starr, Live Skull doing Mad King shit. Then we had Chris Burns and his Going Concerns out of Montreal with Liquid Lunch. BXMR out of Rotterdam with Cha Cha Cha. Bronson Caves. First, though, Bronson Caves is some Project Dezo from, I think he's the third singer for Black Flag. And Kay's brother Paul. Finally, Live Skull with Pusher Man. Yeah. So what's the plan now?
I know exactly. Well, we're going to go to Europe in February.
You got a tour mapped out, okay.
Yeah, like a 3.5 weeks, 4 week tour. And, continue playing shows, start working on a new album.
You mean you're already starting on a new album? You guys are cooking up new songs?
Yeah, we started jamming. My personal ambition with this record is to really try to get back to having the core ideas come from the jamming.
Instead of like personal own brings in the thing.
Yeah. Okay. It just seems more organic, and I think people are more free playing, not thinking so much, and you get some ideas that are more fluid, I think.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed people who spend a lot of time with menus end up ordering the same thing all the time. So if you maybe just go where you're at, I stab, you know, maybe that's that kind of idea. But what about on the internet, if people want to find out about Live Skull, is there a place they can go?
Yeah, I mean, the best is, you know, our Instagram, Live Skull Official, or Facebook, Live Skull. And one other thing about the playing live is it gets you outside of yourself. I mean, I guess that's kind of what we were saying. But it goes back to, like, the lyric writing, for instance, for Party Zero, which I do a lot of cut up mixed with stream of consciousness and collaging. And I think that that takes you outside of yourself and hopefully connects into a different, you know, force that's out there. And I think that's an ambition going forward with Live Skull.
And when you unite the words with the music, does it matter which comes first?
Usually.
Like, let me ask you this. Do you keep like a reservoir, some kind of trove of words, or do you write on demand? Like, hey, I need a tune. I got to come up with stuff.
I try to be writing all the time, and without thinking about it, just word after word, you know, borrowing phrases I read or hear or see, and just keep it. And then when it comes, when the music is starting to come together, then I'll start pick and choosing lines from that body of writing that seem to go with the sound of the music, and then it starts to take a shape on its own, and then starts to have a meaning, and then it starts to have a theme. And then when you work on it consciously, finally, then you mold it. It starts getting molded into a real song. So it's a layered process that allows for as much accident and outside influence as possible.
Well, is it kind of like what you and Tom did with the cassettes?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're kind of cherry picking, then okay, and it gets realized as you find the stuff. Yeah, so the stuff ain't so a priori. It's part of the wonder of like discovery. Yeah, I understand. I mean, that's why you want to get the jam thing back. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I realized that, you know, when we did our last jam together. Playing together, I realized, you know, I mean, why do you keep doing this? And those moments when something comes out that is new and has never been played before, hopefully, or you feel it's new to you at least, that moment is so satisfying and so interesting. Like, where did that come from? That's the fun. That's why you want to keep playing music.
Yeah, I think they call it the Eureka moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can forget about it when you don't experience it. You're like, oh, well, I got to, lug my gear around again or whatever. But then when you do that, you're like, I think that's why so many people have gotten into freeform playing. Try to get that high all the time.
Sure. Instead of connect the dot karaoke fucking.
Right.
Your own karaoke machine, yeah. Look, I can't wait to hear the next Live Skull record. When you get it recorded, will you come back on the show? We can play it, talk about it?
Absolutely. That sounds great.
Okay. Thanks so much. I wish you the best luck. Keep the keel in the water out over there in Europe with your tour. So glad you're playing again, okay?
And I hope we get to play together soon.
Absolute. Share that stage.
Okay, cool.
Okay, brother. People, it's been December 8, 2023 edition of Wapedro, so keep your powder dry.